Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Straight Talk. We are the talk show made for men by men, and I'm Ted Santos. I am your host, and I come to you live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and we talk about relationships, and we do it always from a man's perspective. This is part of what makes us very unique. There are so many platforms where women get to talk about love, money, relationships, children, family, career, all of those things, and you rarely get to hear it from the man's perspective. So we created the platform where men get to talk openly about the things that are really on their mind when it comes to women, relationships, career, making money. And it's the best place in the world for women to hear the real, the raw feelings and thoughts of men. So buckle your seatbelts for this one today, because it's going to be a journey. It's going to open up a number of avenues of conversation from one topic. And before I go down that path, I'd like to say that Straight Talk, this is a show where we do exactly what the name says, Straight Talk. It's where men get to speak like men. Straight, matter of fact, it's classy, it's done with openness and honesty, and there is care, except as men, we have a way of communicating with one another where we can just be straight, not feel offended. In fact, some guys can slug it out physically and go have a beer after that. We've been doing that since we were boys. So this is a place where men, you don't have to like, agree, you can disagree, and we can still talk things through and listen to one another. So I'm here. I created this platform so that kind of interaction can happen with men, and we can talk about real issues in the world, especially in the world of dating and love and marriage. Now, there's one thing about that. I know when you look at our education system, we are taught to look for the answer. You read a book and you answer, you give the multiple choice, you give the right essay answer, and that is how we're taught to think and look for how to resolve problems in life. And many times, perhaps most of the time, the answer is not always what we need. Sometimes it's asking the right question so we can rethink what we're talking about. So I like to ask a lot of questions on this show. And sometimes the questions are counterintuitive. Even in the face of everyone already knows the simple, short answer, the answer and the solution is X. Well, sometimes that's not the best solution. Oftentimes, solutions that we have cause other problems that we haven't really thought through. So on this show, instead of just coming up with the answer, like that's the right answer right there, we really like to think things through. We like to talk it through, and sometimes they're tough and they're provocative, even they're not comfortable. So this is a place where you really get to talk things through, and sometimes what you think is just common sense maybe isn't as common as everyone thinks when you think it through. So we're going to take on a topic today that actually has that kind of it has a need for questions. And we're going to talk about relationships, except we're going to talk about something that you could say people think about, and we've all thought about it, men and women. You think about finding the one, like that's the one made just for me. I'm not talking about someone you married. Just because you've been married for 30 years doesn't mean you're married like the one, or what some people may coin as your soulmate. I don't know if there really is a the one for anyone or a soulmate. Maybe there is. We're going to talk about it. Except the real question that on today's show is, what if you're not the one for the one you call the one? So you found someone and you swear up and down, this is the one. I like things about them. I just have a feeling. I've had people talk to me about, you know, the gut feeling, intuition. And you're ready to tell the world you found your soulmate, except this person that you claim to be a soulmate, well, they don't see you that way. They like you. They like hanging out with you. They enjoy intimacy with you. Except the idea of you being the one to them may not have even crossed their mind. In fact, you may be what some consider a time killer. Like you are you're holding a place while they explore and look for that person who they like to see as the one. So how do you handle that? I mean, you swear up and down you found the one, and you're ready to spend the rest of your life with this person. You know, as a guy, you can meet a woman and she'll tell you, you're the one. I know what I want. And you're it. As men, we know that we approach women and we like women. And we know sometimes we approach a woman and they don't even like us. In fact, I've met quite a few women who say when they first met their now husband, they hated him. They just didn't like him. That was their gut reaction. I don't like this guy. And yet, she married the guy and now says she can't live without him. So, we're going to talk about what happens when you meet someone who's the one. And sometimes when you meet him, they're not. Like in the example I just named, women who say, I met him, I didn't like him, and now, bang, without question, he's the one. So I want to have this conversation with you. We're going to be taking calls today, and we're going to do this live and straight talk. One of the things that we like to do here is have multiple callers on the line, so we do it like a forum. And the phone number is 323-642-1387. That's 323-642-1387. So I want to, while there are many ways that we can look at this conversation, you know, what if you're not the one for the one you call the one? So or you meet someone who says you're the one and you just don't see them that way. It could be a guy saying the woman is beautiful. I love her body. She's well-educated. She has a great job. You could say she's sweet or she has a few things going for her. Maybe you're not so impressed with her communication skills. You may not even be impressed with her family background. That could be a concern. You know, there are all kinds of things. And I'm not even sure how most people categorize someone as the one or soulmate. Someone was telling me about a book where there is some evidence that supports, I haven't read the book, but evidence that supports that there's a lot of merit to a gut reaction in choosing someone. You hear a lot of women talk about women's intuition, that, you know, I won't take anything away from it. I would just ask, if women's intuition is that strong, how could we have a divorce rate? So, and you could say the guy changed, then was it intuition you were using? Was there something else? You know, what's the criteria? I'd like to hear from some of you the criteria you use to actually classify, categorize someone as the one. How do you know it's the one? That's one of the things I like to talk about, because sometimes if you have a really good system or method or way of assessing someone who's the one, maybe there are people out there who don't have such a good system for assessing someone who is the one for them, and they could be missing out on that. They may have already met that person. Some people talk about the one who got away. So I dated a woman for some time, and she grew up in what you would call a good, healthy family. You know, all families have challenges they go through, but I'd say she grew up in a what you would call a normal family. You know, parents college educated. She and her brother went off to college, and during the course of growing up, one of the things that this woman I was dating, one of the things she would hear from her mother was her mother would talk about the one who got away, the guy that she wished she had married, and how she believed life would be different. So essentially, her mother married the second runner-up. She didn't marry her first choice. She married the guy who was not the one, even though she was married to this guy, 30 years, however long it was. But she didn't marry the guy who she would consider to be the one. So I want to talk more about this, but I want to take some calls and see, let's see if we can get someone to talk about what they think of being the one or this topic. I'm going to take a call from area code 917. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, is this
917, it's
calling.
You. You're live.
It's me. Oh, great. Fantastic.
It's you.
It's me. Sorry,
we don't have a prize for you. We don't have a prize for you, but you won.
<No prize. laughs> I won. Okay. So, Ted, I always listening on the show. I always listen in on the show, and sometimes I call in, and I didn't want to miss it. So I just got on, so I didn't hear the conversation. And so I'm listening. I'm listening, and so I don't have a comment, and I'm just going to continue listening. And unless you want to fill me in on what was said.
Sure. We're talking about what if you're not the one for the one you call the one, or you meet someone and they think you're the one, and you don't see them that way. You really like them. They're attractive. How do people handle dealing with being engaged or involved? You know, you're in a relationship with someone who you don't call the one. And I was just talking about a woman I once dated, and her mother would often tell her two children how she could have married this other guy who she thought was the one. So she essentially married, the woman I was seeing married her father, and her father was not her first choice. He was second place.
Okay.
And she would even say sometimes in front of her husband that she could have married this other guy, and she thought the other guy was a better choice, but it didn't work out. So, how do people really deal with that? And I mean, that, in a marriage, as a husband, hearing your wife talk about the other guy that you didn't marry, the guy who got away, and to have your children hear that, I can't imagine what that's like. But, the woman I was seeing told me that they would hear that, they heard it quite a few times over the course of their life before going off to college. So,
so it seems, I didn't, you said so it seems, so I just want to hear what else, what you were going to say.
So it seems, so I asked, what do you think of this?
Okay.
What do you think of this topic?
Okay, so with the what you just shared about the person that you were seeing and her mother would say to her father, I could have married someone else, that you was not my first choice, and it seems that that person didn't really have a she wasn't present to who she got married to. Like, you know, the person that you marry, would, I would think, would be the person that you choose. On some level, she chose him. She chose her father. But to, you know, say that to, you know, in front of your children, it's kind of like devastating, because it's like you're like kind of in this limbo state, or a place where, you know, that person is just, it's not, you're not accepted. Like, it was a mistake. Like, you're a mistake. Oh, this marriage was a mistake, and the kids are a mistake. So it seems like, how is it, are they a mistake? I didn't hear what you said, Ted.
I said, ouch.
Hello?
Ouch.
Yeah, ouch. So it's like, you know, people can say really cruel things, you know, especially family and husband and wife can say really cruel things to each other, and they don't really are not present to how devastating it is to the children, and so it seems you know, that there wasn't communication or any kind of affinity within that marriage. And I don't know if that person said it out of anger, because sometimes you just say things out of anger, but
She wouldn't say that wasn't an angry conversation. It would be a dinner conversation. It would be a polite conversation. You know, your mother could have married this other guy, and look at all the great things he's doing. It wasn't out of anger. She would just have it in front of her husband sometimes.
Yeah, but yeah, it seemed that how did, you know, her, she wasn't, so then she should have went and married him. She felt that way. You know, it's like, why torture yourself? Why torture yourself, you know, being married to someone and you're not, that's not the one, you know, then, you know, and her husband too. Her husband is going to tolerate that and just sit there and just listen to that for years and years and years. So,
well, that could actually build resentment in the marriage, right? Because at some point you're always being compared to this kind of a ghost, right? The guy who's not there.
Right. Yeah. So it's like the husband, instead of, you know, that's the thing about domestic violence, is that the men will keep things in and keep them things in until they just explode, and the person just says something and they just, you know, go off, because they that's why this radio show is so important, Ted, because this, you know, men get a chance to call in and say their point of view, and women get a chance to listen. So
I dated this woman for a while, so, and I've met her, you know, I spent Christmas and Thanksgiving with her family, so it was a, you know, if there's such a thing as normal, it was a very normal, you know, suburban household. There was no violence. She never spoke of that. She grew up in a, you know, what you would call a normal house, and they had their story just like any other family. But it, for the most part, it was normal. It was not your crazy dysfunctional. But you know, some people say the wife saying, I should have married this other guy. Some people may call that dysfunctional, right? There are lots of people who married second choice. They didn't marry the first choice. And they may tell their friends, they may tell their children that I married, you know, my second choice, not my first choice. If they don't talk about why they didn't marry their first choice. I mean, sometimes maybe they made what people would call a mistake, right? They misjudged the person and they lost them. And other times, maybe they didn't qualify for that, their first choice, yet they still compare everyone else to their first choice. maybe they were not prepared for their first choice. They were prepared for second choice. And in the case of this woman, her father, he chose the mother. I don't think he was looking for some other woman. Like, he seemed to be happy with his choice, but he may have had some resentment behind that, which I think may have led to some other things like infidelity.
Right. It would have been interesting for the daughter to find out what her father thinks. How did he felt about his wife saying that? You know, like ask.
Right.
You know, find out how. Maybe it didn't bother him. He's like, well, you know, you didn't marry your first choice, but you know, you're married to me, and I'm happy that we're married. You know, and we have
a
great relationship. And I won.
Right. I won.
Yeah.
Right.
It could be like that. We don't know. She doesn't know. You know, the daughter doesn't know. So it's like it seemed like it troubled her. So it would be in her best interest to find out what her dad thinks. Are her parents still married? You know.
When I last spoke to them, they were married over 30 years when I last spoke to them. I'm really like 40 years. So I don't know if they're still married.
Maybe he didn't, you know, he thought that he won. Like you said, maybe he won. But, you know, in that situation, you know, where, say you're attracted to someone and the other person is not attracted to you, then you know, it's like it depends, like where you are, what your mindset is, and what your views are. And so there are lots of different types of relationships. It doesn't have to be a sexual relationship. You know, it could be so the person the other person is not intimate with you, but you could have another kind of relationship.
That's correct. That happens sometimes. I mean, it's, well, a lot of guys hear it when they call it getting put in the friend zone. So they may have met a woman who they think is absolutely the one, and she says, let's just be friends. I mean, that's, you know, for lots of guys, that's a death sentence. To be put in the perpetual and endless or the bottomless pit of the friend zone. And some guys may sort of fly around and hang around hoping that some guy breaks her heart and she'll find out that he was the one who was always there for her. He'll be the prince and he'll save her. Some guys actually do that. They wait around. Sometimes they can wait a long time and miss other opportunities doing that. But that happens.
That does happen, I guess, with women too. But on one of your talk show, I think Michael was sharing that he met someone and this person, had a relationship, and then they were still friends when she met someone else and got married, and they were still friends.
Right.
So sometimes, that relationship can change, and then you're just, you know, just there for that person no matter what.
Well, yeah, and that, the case you're talking about, he was not put into the friend zone. He actually had an intimate relationship with her, and he didn't let it go beyond what it was. And see, that's the other thing. Sometimes people are in intimate relationships with someone, and they feel like this guy is the one, and I'm just waiting for him to put a ring on my finger, and he may not be thinking the same way. He may really like you, but just he may not see you as his wife for whatever reason. And there are some women who who you will hear. I waited 3 years and I'm leaving. Either you're going to marry me or I'm out. You're wasting my time. I want to be with someone else. You know, you hear those stories where the guy is given an ultimatum and he may or may not see her as the one, except the woman may see her that way. You hear those stories.
Yeah, things like that, you know, things like that happen. And it's not like the end of the world. People just move on. And, so it's like, you know, it really depends on the couple. And it doesn't have to get, you know, escalate into something really dramatic. You know, it's all, you know, in a conversation about, getting things straight. And so that this way both people are clear and they don't have these other expectations because they're both in communication with each other. I think what the problems start is when there's no communication and that they both have different expectations, and then the other person gets angry and it becomes something else.
Yeah, and that can happen, and sometimes even when they do talk, if the person says, "Hey, you're the one," one of the things that can happen is they can end up comparing that person to everyone else, and that can cause people to miss out on the person who's in front of them. So when I was talking about the woman I used to date, you know, perhaps because her mother kept talking about the guy who got away, maybe she never fully experienced her husband because she was talking about some other guy who got away. Sometimes
so
people
you're saying
miss
that
out
because
on what's
her
right
mother
in front of them.
Oh, so you're saying that because her mother always shared with her that she never married the first person that she was with, the person that you were seeing had that same view.
I'm saying I dated a woman. Her mother always often talked about the guy who got away. So by thinking about the guy who got away and you're married to your second choice, you may not actually be fully enjoying and experiencing your first choice because you're still thinking about the guy who got away.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's you could be in that frame of mind, and you could be in that frame of mind. So it's this like never-ending kind of void of you missed it. You missed it every day, and you know that's kind of like torturing yourself. It's like
right.
You're torturing yourself.
Right. There's a whole if I coulda, woulda, shoulda, and, you know, you keep playing over, you know, what I should have done, what I could have done, and meanwhile you have a family right in front of you, and you're now engaging that family in that your whole if I coulda, woulda, shoulda, and even there, you know, they may even start wondering, well, I wonder if that guy would have been a better father, or would my parents have a better relationship, you know, what. So you're engaged in really kind of a fantasy and not really asking the questions of, you know, what's in front of me, how do I make the best out of, you know, what I have, you know, did I even measure up to the guy who I called the one, did I measure up? So, you know, what was missing for me? So how do I make what I have better, because that can go on for the rest of your life. You can always talk about
exactly.
If I coulda, woulda, shoulda, and then you're with someone talking about the one who got away, and then you miss the second runner-up, you miss out on them, and now you've got two people that you're talking about, who were so great. Now you're working on number three, and then you end up missing that because you're not dealing with the person in front of you. You're still talking about this one or two people from the past who got away.
Yes, yeah, that's true. You could spend your life doing that, and you could. You could just spend your life doing that. So, some people probably do that. So some people probably have that experience. And that's it. You know, what are you going to do? What are they going to, what, you know, it's like, that's why, communication is just so important. And I met someone today and, It's like families don't communicate, and at one time, in the tribal cultures, they would when people lived in villages, there was a lot more communication with families. They would just get together and sing songs. And play music in the evening, and talk. And so we're living in a culture where we're just, working and taking care of a family, and so there is no communication. But some people, that's the life that they have, and that's what they, everyone is responsible for what they choose. And so, everyone is responsible for that. So you can't, undo other people's lives, but you can contribute to them, and they can have a choice in what they're choosing if they have a bigger picture of what all the choices are, and so they can choose powerfully what they want in their life.
Yeah, and
so
sometimes,
that's why this talk show is so, yeah.
I was going to say, there's something about making any choice you make the right choice. And there's something powerful about that. And I'd like to see if we can get another caller in here. I'm going to go to area code 518. 518, you're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, how you doing? My name is Joanne, and I'm calling from upstate New York.
Hey, Joanne, how are you? Thanks for calling in. So what do you think of this? We're talking about the one, the soulmate. I'm not necessarily talking about people who've been married for 30, 40, or 50 years, because there are people who marry their second choice, they don't marry the one. So what if a person is not the one for the one they call the one, and they end up marrying second choice or marrying no one? So, what do you think of this? And do you think soulmates are the one? Do you think it even exists?
I do think it exists. I also think it's possible for it to exist in more than one person, depending on where you are in your life.
Okay.
I had someone that I felt was a soulmate when I was in high school, my first love. And we were on the same page about everything.
Okay, perfect. Good.
Literally everything, from the type of music that we listened to, types of clothing that we liked. I mean, things that are important to 17 and 18 year old kids. life ambitions. We're fairly similar. We wanted to move out of the Philadelphia area. We had big dreams. We're doing this. We're doing that. So on and so forth. And he was my twin flame at that time.
Okay.
Clearly, we split. That was, 1988? clearly. And I am, this is my second marriage. My first marriage was not my soulmate, and he, if I had been in my right mind, I never would have chosen him. But that's another show and another story. Another show, another story, another time. But my current husband.
So wait. Let me ask you. Just want to ask. So you found the one, right? You call them your twin flame.
Yeah.
I think you used that word.
That's what I felt. Yeah.
And you did not marry your twin flame.
No, my twin flame was unfortunately a flaming idiot and decided that wanting extracurricular attention was more important than us, and we split up.
Okay. So at some point, he was not the one.
At some point, yeah, he ceased to be the person that I thought was the one. And looking back, I can see that I thought he was the one at that stage in my life, not necessarily knowing better. He was my first everything, if you catch what I'm saying without being vulgar. He was my first everything. So when that happens, when that door opens, you know, it's just like, oh my goodness, you know. So yes, at that stage in my life, it definitely felt like that's what he was. Meeting my current husband, he is actually everything that I wanted and needed. And he is much more of a soulmate in the sense of what we're talking about right now. And
he's the one.
Yes. He absolutely
he's that guy. Right.
He's that guy. Yeah, he is that guy. He's got me making sandwiches and opening beers and all this other kind of stuff. he's got me asking permission for about money and all types of stuff. Yes, he's that guy.
Okay.
So I guess as far as your initial question, knowing that he was, for me, at the risk of sounding like a B-rated romantic comedy, I literally knew the moment that I met him because of how he greeted me. We were introduced by a mutual friend. We were introduced by a mutual friend, and this mutual friend, we're all gamers. Most of 90% of my friends were all gamers, whether it's video games, board games, you know, whatever. So he invited us, had been inviting me to play Dungeons and Dragons. Dungeons and Dragons is not my thing. I'm like, dude, I'm not sitting around rolling dice with a bunch of weirdos. No, I'm not doing it. So he's been harassing me. No. In walks his friend and a few other guys to where we worked, and the mutual friend introduced us. And he looked me in my eyes, and he greeted me by name. It wasn't, hey, baby, how you doing? Girl, it's so nice to meet you today. None of that. It's, hey, Joanne, how are you? You know, I've heard a lot about you. It was a pleasure to meet you. Like, real simple, real basic, real respectful. He wasn't sizing me up or trying to figure out where I would fit in his sex life. He just greeted me and he smiled at me in my eyes, not at my waistline or whatever. And held me conversation and had absolutely nothing to do with who I'm dating. Girl, you want to grab a drink, though? Like, he just talked to me. And I had to get to know him. That was it right there.
You're opening another door, right? So, you know, that's another thing is how do you know the person that you're meeting or in a relationship is the one? So you're actually going down that path. And so there were things that you were looking for in a man, and he was displaying them like right from the gate.
Because at that point in my life,
right.
I was and. I mean, it's a shame to say at 28, that's when I met him in 1998. I'm sorry, I was 27.
Okay.
I was sick at the young age of 27 where, you know, you're supposed to be happy meeting new people and so on and so forth. I was sick of dating. Over it,
right.
Done with it. I can't anymore. I'm meeting the same type of guys, and no matter how I evolve or change my energy or what have you, I'm still meeting the same creeps, cretins, morons, idiots, and jackasses. I'm tired. So here comes this breath of fresh air, and he's hitting on all cylinders.
All right, perfect.
He's not
good.
Braggadocious. He's not loud. He's not obnoxious. He's actually talking to me. He's you know, treating me like a human being. I got to get to know this guy. So when he left, I told my friend, "Yeah, listen, you guys playing D&D this weekend?" He's like, "You know, you're really transparent." And I'm like, "I really don't care." So we started playing D&D. I joined a campaign, and I chased this man for a year. And got absolutely nowhere, which was very humbling. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not a supermodel or anything like that, but let's just say I never had a problem with getting a guy's attention and maintaining it. This guy, he was always kind, sweet, respectful. He was respectful to my daughter. You know, walk us to the train, this, that, and the other thing. When we're leaving D&D and it's late, he never once stepped out of line with me, and I tried. Jesus Christ. I tried. He didn't break. Not once. And even though I was resentful of it at the time, I actually admired him all the more for it, because it meant that I'm not able to manipulate you. And that means that there's a very strong chance that other people can't manipulate you either, which means that I can trust you.
Interesting.
So he graduated from school, went on about his business. We lost contact. 2008, the same mutual friend resurfaced. He resurfaced along with him. We reconnected, and here we are. We celebrate the anniversary of our first date on October 4th, and we celebrate 3 years of marriage on November 6th.
Congratulations.
We've been together for 11 years. Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you some questions, but I want to bring in a couple of callers. Let's see if we can even get a guy on the line. So hold on. I want to bring in two callers. One second.
No problem.
I'm going to take area code 415. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Janelle from San Francisco.
Great. Janelle, hold one second, I'm going to ask you a question, but I want to see if I can get another person here. I'm going to take area code 405, you're live on the air with Trey Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Chris. I'm calling from Oklahoma.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for calling. So I'm going to ask you and Janelle, who just come on the phone. Janelle, so what do you think of this topic? You know, what if you're not the one for the one, you call the one, or you know, how do you even know you're talking to the one?
I don't really use that framework, the one, because I don't believe there's just one. So,
okay.
It just implies that there's only one.
So
or
do you
very
think there's
few.
Even, do you think there's even such a thing? People talk about their soulmate. So are you saying there's no soulmate out there to talk about?
I would say that, having, a type of energy wavelength, being on the same wavelength. And some wavelengths, you can feel the energy stronger than with others. So I would say that I can feel the energy wavelength of someone before saying hello to a stranger.
Okay. So, and what if you feel they're the one because the energy is strong and they just don't see you that way?
If they don't see me that way is because it's what they're seeing. But as far as the feeling, typically the energy tends to be mutual. Like maybe it's a type of energy that repels or attracts. But I would say that there are other variables where if the energy feels mutual but the attraction isn't, there could be other variables like, I don't know, anything from, looks to sound or smell or anything, socioeconomic, just outfit or his outfit. So there are superficial variables that could repel, but I would usually say like the energy generally feels like mutual, like holding hands. If you hold hands with someone and someone, you know, repels or snatches their hand away, you can feel like the energy, oh, it's too soon, or maybe it feels really great. But it generally can, you can both feel the energy from the palm of your hands as to whether you can sustain holding hands over the course of a conversation through a park.
And that would be one indication that that person is the one.
It's one indication that if you can hold someone's hand and talk and just stroll through a park for hours, that the energy is probably good, because usually if the energy is bad, you can't take it that long holding hands. It's a pretty intimate sensation, in my opinion.
So let's hear from a guy, Chris.
Yeah, this is Chris.
I'm the only
Chris
guy
from your page.
Yeah, I know exactly who it is. Glad to hear your voice finally, Chris.
Good to hear your voice too, man. Jesus Christ, dude. I don't know how you can fucking do it. The bullshit these women are saying, I can't, man. They are so full of shit. Every last one of them. The one before, she said she had three soulmates. I thought a soulmate was a one and done thing.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm even asking.
There's no such thing as a soulmate. At best, you find someone that you're compatible with, someone who you share, you're like-minded with. That's all I can say. You're like-minded with, and you can put up with their bullshit. They can put up with yours. You don't mind their flaws. They don't mind yours. That's it. And you can just hope. You can hope that once you get with that woman, that she doesn't divorce you 10 years down the road and take half your shit.
Yeah, I got that. That's a downside. But let me ask you, what if you meet someone and you think you're, like you said, compatible? Like, this woman is the one, except she just doesn't see you that way. I mean, there are guys who go down the, what do you call it, the friend zone path, and they hate it. You know, that's the dead zone.
Well, it's a predicament they put themselves in. So, I mean, if you're with a woman and you have more invested in it than her, why the fuck are you with her? She's not special. Matter of fact, women outnumber men. So men are the prize, not women. Why the fuck would you waste time with a woman who's not giving you the same, the same feelings that you're investing in her, same feelings, same emotions? If your return on investment with her is not the same as what you're giving, get out, go away. There's plenty of fish out there. There's nothing special about these women. Nothing.
All right.
As a matter of fact, that one you were talking to earlier who said she was on her third soulmate, yeah, you know why she settled down with that dude at 27 as a single mother? Because the fucking wall was approaching. If the wall wasn't approaching and she wasn't scared she was going to be an old single maid, she would not have got with that dude that played Dungeons & Dragons. Because you know what? When she was 22, she wasn't checking for a dude with playing Dungeons & Dragons. Nope, it wasn't until she started approaching 30. And all of a sudden now she wants to do Dungeons and Dragons, the dudes in college. But before that, I bet it was nothing but Pookies and Tyrones.
Well, that's interesting. So
I'm sorry,
first,
sir. I need to address you. Excuse me. Hi. How are you?
Joanne.
I'm sorry. Yes, it is. I need to correct you, sir. I was married. There was no Pookies and Tyrone.
You were married twice.
I'm going to move on from you because you're factoring correct.
No.
You have a great evening.
Hold on, Joanne. No, Joanne. Hold on.
You have a great evening.
Chris, let her talk. Let her talk.
I did.
Hear
I let her talk. She chose to leave.
You have some noise. You have noise in the background. So Joanne. I think it's you. It may be rubbing against the microphone or something. There's some background.
Who, me?
Noise.
No, I've actually stepped into a quiet room and the quick kids are actually.
No.
I think it might be Chris.
It might be Chris. Is that better?
Yeah, I think you might be rubbing the microphone, and that might be the. Yeah, that's perfect now. That's great. Okay. So, all right. So, Chris, I think what Joanne is saying, and you correct me, Joanne. you met a guy when you were 17. You felt like he was a soulmate.
Yep.
Then you married a guy when you were older, early 20s, and you ended up in a divorce, correct?
That is correct. That is correct.
Okay. All right. So you married in your early 20s?
Yes, I married when I was 22.
Okay. So I
and my children were born in wedlock.
So that's
I did not say that I had
correct.
Three soulmates. I said that I met someone that I felt was that at 17. At 17, you know, your favorite actor on TV is your soulmate. And that was my point of illustrating that about where you are in life. So I don't have a problem conversing with Chris. That's what he wants to do, and that's fine. But what we're going to do is deal in fact. And the fact is that there were no Pookies and Tyrones. I'm not delusional. And the other insults that were just slung at me for no reason. I've always been respectful to you, Chris, online, no matter how you've talked to me. So I would appreciate if we could operate in the same energy. Now,
are you done? Can I talk now?
I believe so. I was really answering Ted, but please feel free, respectfully. Please don't start cursing and yelling and name calling. Please.
I'm going by your own admission, how you said in between the current husband you with now and your first husband, you had dated all kinds of
but they
men
and
you were just
sick. And we understand what Pookies and Tyrones are. We're talking felons.
I don't know that.
Things like that.
I don't
deal with those types of men. I've never dealt with those types of men. I'm not built for a felon lifestyle. I don't like dealing with irresponsible men with 15, 16 kids and 15, 16 baby mamas. That's not what I do. It's never been what I do. I wasn't raised that way to deal with those types of people. And I've explained that to you before, which is why I was offended, because we've talked about this. I don't engage in that type of behavior. I don't teach my daughters to engage in that kind of behavior. I don't tolerate it. So that's why I stepped in and interrupted, which I apologize. I realize this, you know, man's space, man's talk show, and I understand that and respect that, as Ted knows. But I had to step in there because that's not unequivocally untrue. There are black women who do not deal with felons and Pookies and Tyrone.
I'll just say this. There's no way for me to 100% verify what you say. And when you talk to women, women think that when they win arguments by hitting people with this barrage of words. And no, you can out-talk me. It's not going to change. It's not going to make anything you say factual. And it's not going to prove anything. I don't know this guy. I'm just going to say there's a reason. If all those guys that you dated before weren't Pookies and Ray Rays, how come you didn't marry any of them? Why was there so many men in between your first husband and
because
second
there
husband?
Wasn't so many men. Who said there were so many men?
You did.
What, you don't
you
know
did.
My you don't know my tolerance level. Maybe it was two. Maybe it was three. Maybe I you know what, I'm not someone who likes
okay,
to
so
waste
how,
my
so how many was it? So how many
so,
was it? Let's not split hairs. Let's just
oh,
ask how many
oh,
was
well,
it.
Wait a second. We're getting way off. So here's the thing that I want to talk about next. So I want to talk about, and you're getting to it, Chris, both you and Joanne, talking about the criteria, and I'm asking you too, Janelle and Judith. How do you know that you're talking to someone who's the one, whether you call it a soulmate? Janelle, I heard what you said about the energy and holding hands. Chris, you talk about compatibility. I mean, there's a lot of research that shows the relationships that stay together are really from people who do have that kind of compatibility, the people who go through the really tough times. You hear extreme situations where the guy loses it all. They're sleeping out of the car, and the woman never leaves his side, and he comes out on top. So, you know, it kind of leaves me wondering, you know, when you meet someone and you feel good, you get this dopamine rush, you get oxytocin.
Yes, that's all it is. That's all it is.
And when people say we had chemistry, I'm going to give my thoughts on this, all right? when people say I had chemistry, I'm going to assert by chemistry, it's less of some magical thing that you read about in a fairy tale. I'm going to say, and I'm going to be responsible for, you know, what I like. So as a man, I've been influenced by women in my life. I have an aunt. She's 5'11.5", and she's kind of sassy. I grew up with both biological parents until they both died. And I'm the oldest of four children. I have a brother who's right under me. And I don't think, even though he and I grew up in the same house, we have the same relatives, what he calls the one or chemistry is not for me. So I'm asserting that the influence of your environment, of what you call attractive, like your ideal person, what you find attractive physically, the cadence of their talk, the shape of their face, there are so many things that people are influenced by when they consider the person to be a one, that it may have more to do with these neurological releases when you say, this person, they may hold their head to the side the way you do. They may smile exactly the way you do. They have all these things that you are familiar with, whether it's the way a family looks, your father, your mother, and they match up. And when they match up, it feels good. You feel at home. It's comfortable. And you get a rush of all these neurochemicals, and it feels like soul food. So I'm kind of like with you, Chris, and you can tell me what you think. I'm saying that oftentimes, and I'm not saying 100% because I don't have the science behind it, but oftentimes people, and Joanne, I'm talking about when you were 17, that, you know, people say at that point in my life, it may have been more of a neurological high, dopamine, oxytocin, and other neurochemicals.
No, baby, no. Mm-mm. Where's Pop-Pop? Yes, I know. Can you go find Pop-Pop?
But to answer your question, Ted, yes. It has to do with dopamine level. That's all the one love. That's all that bullshit is. There's no such thing as love. Love is just, it just means you got a really good nut from the person that you were having sex with, and you like to do it more. You like to keep them around more. So, I mean, your body convinces you that that is the one for you because you want to keep experiencing it. It's a drug, and you want to keep getting that fix. And that's all it is. That's how if the one and love exists, there'd be no divorce court. There'd be no need for divorce.
So you just distilled that down to a grain of rice. So, you know, we live in a world of Hollywood that shows love in all these fantastic ways and fireworks and music.
And keep in mind, though, divorce, these same women that are telling you that these men are the one, they're the ones initiating the divorce. So how can they say that a man is the one, he's the love of their life, then next thing you know, once this man has accumulated so much wealth, so much everything, they decide to divorce him and take half of it?
That happens. It happens more than people would like to know.
80% of marriages.
That's a big number. 80% end in divorce, you're saying?
80% are initiated by women, but the divorce rate is actually, I think, I want to say it's up to about, I can't remember, 60 or 70% now. But out of that 60 or 70%, 80% of those are initiated by the same women who beg the men to marry them in the first place. There's nothing a man gains from getting married. As a matter of fact, he loses.
Interesting. So let's hold that right there. So, ladies,
if you are a man, a man with a wedding ring on your finger, and you are listening right now, you are an absolute idiot.
All right, hold that thought right there. Hold that thought right there. So, ladies, Chris is saying that it's just a neurochemical feeling that becomes as addictive as a drug. And that's when you have found your soulmate, when you have that feeling and you want to keep having it.
And
let me just say, and if the man isn't getting the same high, you may think he's the one because you have all these feelings, but he just may not be getting the same high and doesn't see you that way. What do you think?
Oh, that's entirely possible. I mean, people are different places in their lives, and, you know, you may not, you know, as the commercial used to say back in the day, flick their bick.
Right.
So you can definitely
okay.
feel stronger for somebody than that person feels for you. I mean, it's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody on this phone call right here. Listen, you're the finest thing I've ever seen. Oh, wait, pump your brakes. Hold on a second. It happens. As far as the dopamine phase, and it only happens with, you know, I believe that some sort of sexual connection was discussed just a second ago. My husband and I didn't have sex the day that we met, so I don't know. So I don't know where, you know, if it's just the dopamine phase connected to some sort of intimate connection. We didn't have an intimate connection when we met, and I know that I definitely felt something very special.
No, you were 20. You were 27 and a single mother.
I was not 27 and a single mother. That's number one. I believe I said that I was married. My child was born in wedlock. So no, I wasn't a single mother. I was divorced. I was divorced, so that's number one, okay? Number two, this wall theory that you have, I'm more than aware of it, and I believe that
it's
a valid
not a theory.
Concept.
It's true.
I have not cut you off, and I'm sorry. My grandbaby is crying. Can you give me one quick second, please? I apologize.
Sure.
Hold on a second. I'm really getting the family settled for the evening at this time. Is everything all right? Okay. All right, I'll be right back. Sorry, it's usually bedtime around these parts. What was I saying? The 27, the wall wasn't an issue for me at that age. It is now, at 48, but not at that time. I felt the way that I felt because of the way that I felt, not because of any validity and resources he might have had. My husband was a broke student. When we met, he had no money.
I'm not surprised.
he had very few prospects, but he was in school, studying. He's a video game artist, and you know, had goals and ambitions and things for himself. Didn't bother me that, you know, he was in school. Didn't bother me that he was building his life and his career. I fail to see where that's an issue. It's certainly better than Tyrone on the corner or Pookie being a Madden king in his mama's basement. He had his own place, taking care of himself and doing what he needed to do to better himself, and he did that. He works for a major video game company now. So our interaction didn't have anything to do with desperation on my part. Ooh, I better have a man before I'm 30. Yet no. Nothing like that. There are a lot of women who are like that. I've never fallen into that category. I think a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that they've met the one and try to force that person to believe that you're the one. And I think that might be part of the high divorce rate you're talking about. There's a lot of bait and switch that goes on as it pertains to relationships. And, you know, the dopamine phase hits, the intimacy is great, and people fool themselves into thinking, all right, maybe she's right, or maybe he's right, maybe I am the one, and they move forward with whatever it is that they're doing, and it's not real. It's not stable. And in those situations, there are red flags, and both sexes do ignore them to think that they're going to build something better or do something good, or they just want something from this person and are plotting to do whatever it is they need to do 5 or 6 years from now. Those things do happen.
Okay, good. So Janelle and Judith, do you have any thoughts? We're saying that the idea of a soulmate is a myth, and it's really just neurochemicals that make you feel good, like dopamine and oxytocin is another one. It's the bonding chemical. It's also like a love drug, and women secrete much more than men. So a woman could have the sensation of wanting to bond with both those chemicals secreting and feel like this is soulmate. This guy is the one. Maybe it's just chemicals in your brain and you're addicted to it. What do you think of that?
I think it's more of a spiritual aspect of it. It is a
chemical reaction, but you could override the addiction part. I mean, addiction is never used in a positive kind of, has a positive connotation in that it suggests like codependence or some kind of disorder or lack of discipline, weakness, or just lack of accountability. It's never like an additive thing. People don't strive to become addicted because it suggests that there's some kind of lack of control or desire to want to be responsible for one's actions. So addiction, just discounts that there's actually more to it than just saying I'm weak and fell ill to coffee or ice cream and I can't control my weight. I can't control my caffeine intake. I can't control my health. I can't control anything. And so I'm now just, subject to whatever it is, sex addiction, addiction to a person. And then it gives a person an excuse to act on some things that may be, crossing the line where it allows for violence or something that's also just, typically unacceptable, that addictions and neurological disorders can be broken so that you have a healthier way of developing a relationship with a person or food or sex or yourself. So, yes, I do think there's more to it than just wanting to, jack off and into someone.
Okay. Well, dopamine rush is not a disorder. It happens. I mean, oxytocin, it happens. I mean, it happens significantly in women, the flow of oxytocin, and that's a big part of what makes them want to bond with a man. It's part of pregnancy and breastfeeding, all of those things. So it's not a disorder. It's just what makes a woman feel close to a guy and they feel like he's the one.
Right, but as far as like addiction, that all our desires to have something repeatedly there can be different ways to go about it. And so people who come out of rehab tend to have that kind of clarity where they realize that wanting someone or something in excess doesn't have to be abused. So you can want a lot of things in excess without the negative energy that can transpire with addictions versus just having a healthy appetite.
So you're saying that people can actually, let's say rehab, for example, go through rehab and then learn to distinguish between just wanting a dopamine rush and actually someone who's compatible. Like Chris is saying, I don't care about the dopamine rush. I want to know if the woman is compatible. And I'm questioning, do people look for compatibility or do they really just depend on a dopamine, an oxytocin rush? And that may not be anything that's deviant. It's just they haven't learned to look for what Chris is saying, compatibility. And now they claim they found the one.
I think they don't look past, a lot of people don't look past that. And that's why the divorce rate is so high.
Exactly.
That's what I think.
Right.
They don't look past it, and now, of course, there's cases like, I just talk about for myself where the compatibility issues popped up immediately. These are things that we are compatible about. These are things that make sense for us, the way we talk and the way we interact. But in a lot of cases, it's just, oh, my God, this feels everything. And it ties into what the media support about love always being happy and always being about what you want and always about the butterflies in your stomach, none of it talks about what happens when the butterflies go away and how compatible you are when there are no butterflies. My husband and I don't have butterflies. Matter of fact, we got into an argument yesterday, and I wanted to dump his dinner over his head.
Okay.
I did. He was just as angry with me. But you know what? We got in here, and we did what we needed to do for these kids, and we got everything that we needed to do in order yesterday. And once we went through our evening routine and everything kind of bubbled down and whatever, we were able to take the compatibility that we have and sit down and talk and resolve everything. And we had a great night once we were able to sit down and have a conversation. And none of that is addressed by the dopamine phase. None of that is addressed by all these feel-good rom-com movies and sitcoms that solve everything in 22 minutes. And everything is supposed to be good and wonderful, and you're always supposed to be happy about everything because that's what love is, and that's what having a soulmate is, and it simply isn't. Love is work, period. There's a lot of happy phases, and there's a lot of not-so-happy phases. And if you aren't compatible, you can't work through the non-dopamine stages.
Well said.
It doesn't work like that.
So, Joanne, perfect, great, well said. So, Chris, I want to take another call, but what I want to ask you, Chris, is talk to me about compatibility, like realistic compatibility for a person to be a one. So before you do that, I want to take a call from area code 848-848. You're live and on the air with Straight Talk. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Ted. This is Dwayne from New Jersey. How you doing there?
Hey, Dwayne. How you doing? Thanks for calling, man. So what do you think of this? People looking for the one, and you find the one, and they tell you you're not the one for me.
Well, I don't think you actually should look. I mean, it just let it happen. You know, I think you're constantly looking for that person to be the one. What happens is, you end up psyching yourself out like, okay, maybe this is the one. And, of course, every relationship that first starts out seems like it's perfect, you know, until you get into that first argument. It's like, oh, gee, we had our first argument. We dated for 3 months and our first argument, and you laugh about it. But then when it keeps going on and on, so you still think you're in love, but then all of a sudden somebody falls out of love and find out it's not love. You know, I believe in love. I've been married over 20 years now, you know. But we've been together 29 years, you know. And, you know, we just take one day at a time. We've seen couples that we looked up to, like if they had the perfect marriage and they end up divorcing, separating, and then they got a divorce. We went to marriage counseling, and matter of fact, our counselor ended up getting a divorce. I should have counseled him, you know. So, you know, I just say take one day at a time, you know. And this is for Chris because he said there's no such thing as love, you know. Well, no, that's your opinion. That's your opinion. No. Wait a minute, Chris. Right. I know what I got with my wife, but here's the thing. That's your opinion. Okay. But the thing is, I know based on between me and my wife, and I'm not talking about other people because we're not going to look at other people. We just look at ourselves, you know? And I think it was Joanne said, you know, she dated, regardless who she dated, because when men do it, it's okay. You know, we can date as many women until we find that one. And when women do it, it's like, oh, well, you know, she's a slut, this, that, and the other.
Hit me with the simp talk. Come on now.
But the thing is, if she dated, she ended up finding the one, you know, whether he's, whatever you call it, sleazeball or whatever, You know,
I didn't call him anything.
Only way, yeah, but that's the only way you're gonna find out if you're compatible with a person. I mean, you know, before I even got married, I was in the dating scene, and you know, I thought she was the one. Turned out she wasn't the one. There was a girl in high school. I had a crush on her for 4 years, and we didn't start dating. We didn't start dating until after we graduated high school. And you know what? It didn't work out.
Because the football team, the football team was still running through her?
The football team?
Yeah, they were still running through her. Is that why y'all didn't date in high school?
No. This was I went to Eastside High School.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying you said you didn't date her until after you graduated high school. And I'm asking, is it because the football team was still running through her in high school?
Oh, no. She wasn't. She was a quiet girl, you know. She had one boyfriend in high school. She broke up with him, and then, you know, she wasn't out there. And, you know, after we graduated, you know, I said hello and, you know, gave her a hug and a kiss on the cheek, and then that started it, you know. Well, the thing is, here's the thing. I thought, what she did in her personal life, I don't care. But the thing is, what happened was she left me for another guy. I thought she was the one. She left me for another guy.
Surprise, surprise.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. I have no regret, okay? We dated. But you know what? If you think she went to the basketball team, football team, hey, that's like again, that's your opinion. But I don't have no regrets. You know, I'm not hurt by it because I moved on. You know, and I got the woman I got. That's all. You know, so. But that's what I want to say. You know, so everybody's different. You know.
So,
Chris, now let's talk about compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
I want to hear what you would call compatibility. I mean, it's, you're not depending on love as a foundation. It's something that
There's no such thing as love. I don't care what any of them say. It's just a really good nut that you wish you could keep getting. It's a drug release. It's a chemical release in your brain that your body gets addicted to, and you just want to keep getting that fix. That's all it is. It's no different than a crackhead just keep wanting crack. As a matter of fact, that's why crackheads don't, you know, get married or have sex or anything. It's because that same dopamine that's triggered from the chemical reaction we get from being with the one, they get from crack. So they can't, I mean, your body can't have two things, you know, providing you those dopamine levels. And these women saying that, you know, that it's past the dope. No, it's not. Why do you think that now she's arguing with her husband, how she said she wants to dump a plate of food on her head? It's because she's past that dopamine stage. She's no longer getting that. And that's when a divorce usually happens. When women get past those dopamine stages, that's when they start looking for that next fix. They got to find a new dealer. I'm not saying she's going to do it. I'm just saying that is what's common with women. Usually that guy that stops triggering that dopamine in their brain, now they still need it. They still need that drug. Because the only way you can replace one addiction is if you find another.
Okay. Let me ask. Can I just, Chris? Where did you get your studies from? Where did you find that? You know, like where did you get the information? Is it based on your opinion, or you know, you did a study, or you're an expert? You know,
What does it matter?
Yeah, it would matter because then if you said, okay, I found
what you're looking for is a reason to discredit anything I say and validate everything
you provide no
proof of anything you say.
I'm not trying to discredit you. You're
sure
giving an opinion. your opinion got to have facts. You got to
have
facts.
Your opinion didn't
have
facts.
Opinion.
You just stated an opinion.
I gave you a.
Did you provide?
I stated.
Did you provide any facts
well,
with your
I gave
opinion?
You my. Yeah, I gave you my facts and my
No, no, no. You gave me your opinion. You didn't give me any facts. You gave me your opinion.
I gave you facts.
But
you're
holding
facts.
My opinion.
I gave you facts,
but
right, I'm going to hold you because you're the one who said that there's no such thing as love. You know, so I just want to.
If love really existed, there'd be no need for divorce court.
I want to know. Well, people fall in
love
and then they can fall out of
love. Really existed,
they can fall out of love.
Okay. If love really existed, you wouldn't have had to wait till the football team got done with that girl in high school so you could have a chance to date her.
I see what you like to do. You like to insult, you know, because and that's what you're doing.
I would be insulted that this girl made me wait. Knowing I had a romantic interest in her,
listen,
she made me wait.
She didn't make me wait.
Done.
She didn't make me wait. She didn't I never said she made me wait. That's right, because I didn't know how to go approach her. I had a crush on her. You heard me say I had a crush on her. It took me 4 years just to say hello, because maybe I felt as though she wouldn't want a guy like me. You know, her standards might have been higher than mine. Well,
they were.
The end,
that's why she's not with you.
Well, that's okay. I'm okay. I moved on. You know, I'm not one of those obsession.
So,
I moved on. I moved on.
So
I'm. You know,
she
I'm
moved
married.
On. She was never.
Whoa.
I got it.
So he's not in a relationship with her anymore. I got it. They're not. They both moved on. But Chris, talk about
right.
It.
She was just biding time.
So what makes it, if it's not love, and if there are people out there, so let me say this, the marriage rates are dropping, right? So there are a lot of men out there who are having the thought and the feeling that marriage is not in my best interest, right? Because you do hear about men losing half, right? So there are a lot of guys backing off. But here's the deal. Marriage amongst the affluent is not dropping. And their divorce rates are extremely low. And the reason why I'm saying this, Chris, is because the affluent, they have more of a propensity to look for compatibility, not based on love. Like, affinity can come. So, as you're saying, you know, with sex and spending time and having affection, intimacy, conversations, and especially if you're accomplishing things together, people tend to have an affinity for someone they spend a lot of time with, right? So if it's not love, Chris, if we look at these, and we don't have to, but if you just, for example, I'm saying people who are affluent continue to marry and have much higher success rates in marriage. So from where you're standing, Chris, what is the kind of compatibility that would have people like that who are out there creating generational wealth, they're building legacies, their children marry, and, you know, they go on for generations to marry and accomplish things. So what's the compatibility people should be looking for if they're going to claim they want the one?
If you're talking about, like, you're talking about the affluent, okay? For them, I don't think it's as you say it is. I think they have a facade to maintain. You know, they get invited to all these galas where other couples are. So they have to, they stay together, I want to say, probably by necessity, you know, because they like I said, they have to keep that facade. They want to keep, you know, the appearance that everything is great, but it's really not. Behind closed doors, they're just as miserable as poor people. It's just that they want to keep that appearance. That's why you see when they finally do get divorced, it's even worse, you know, than poor people.
So how do you
because they have so much animosity?
How do you account for the people who ended up living out their car and then hit it big? You know, they turned it around and hit it big, and the wife never left the side, or had to sell everything, lost the house, moved in with the husband's mother. There are quite a few stories like that. So they already look bad, right? So the facade is crushed. I'm moving back with my mother. I'm sleeping out of my car. There's no facade to even protect at that point.
Right. I don't know.
Do you know who Robert? Do you know who Robert Kiyosaki is? The author of Rich Dad Poor Dad.
I've heard of the book. Yeah, but I don't know his whole story per se.
He's one person, and I'm not saying this like as he's just some exception to the rule, but he's one person. He and his wife slept out of the car, and he was able to turn it around with his wife still by his side. There's a guy named Thomas Stanley who wrote The Millionaire Next Door, and he wrote The Millionaire Mind. And in The Millionaire Mind, he did an extensive amount of research on affluent people and why their divorce rates are low. And he said it had nothing to do with money. It was what kept them together in even really bad times. So he talked about case studies of people losing it all, sleeping out of the car or losing the job. And now the wife, who was a stay-at-home mom, has to work. So it happens. And that may be part of the reason that those people are able to find success, because they understand that a relationship is a team sport. So there must be some compatibility, just like tonight their team's playing football. So, you know, one guy is an offensive center. He's not trying to take the ball and be quarterback. You know, there are roles they're playing, but there's compatibility and cooperation. So I'm asking from where you're standing, you know, and the football team is a great example. For them to play well and do well and go to the Super Bowl, they don't need to have love for one another. There are some things they need to have, and maybe that's why there's such a high divorce rate. I think it's 70% of women who initiate divorces. So
80%.
There's something missing in those cases. Well, there's something missing, right? And it probably started
I'll say this. You're comparing the top 1% of society to the other 99. Now, an exception to the rule doesn't negate the rule. So that small percentage that you're talking about, it does nothing to deter for the fact that that's not the norm. That is not how it normally goes.
In no way am I refuting. You get no debate.
Yeah.
From it. That
being said, there's no absolutes in life. So yeah, you have 1%, the top 1%, which are thriving in marriage, which are staying married. But that's just the top 1%.
But see, that's the point of the conversation. So, you know, people who think they found the one, and it's really not, because it's just a dopamine high, right? So if we address that, right? So just saying I have the one because I feel good, except there are people out there making it work, and they're accomplishing all kinds of great things. And I've met some of those, what you would call 1%. I've met them while living in other countries. I've met them here in New York, and you see their interaction, right? And you hear the stories. And I even know women who were raised in that 1%, and they will tell you, you know, my mother loves my father so much, but my daddy is such a good guy. I want a guy like my daddy, but I never want to be like my mother because my mother just gives my daddy whatever he wants, right? So they almost have a resentment towards their mother, except they love their father. However, they don't seem to understand that to find a man like your daddy, your daddy's looking for a woman like your mother, and they don't fully figure that out, the whole compatibility. So what I'm engaging you in is that we establish dopamine, oxytocin are driving feelings, and people feel like it's the one. There has to be something that's working for people to actually pull it off, because, you know, I have seen the stories and I've read about them, the case studies, and I've heard about them, you know, from the children of parents like that. So I'm asking you, what would be the compatibility? And I'm now, Dwayne, I'm asking everyone, but Chris, I'd like to hear your thoughts. If there's compatibility possible beyond the dopamine and oxytocin rush, what would that be?
Oh, that's just you learning to cohabitate with that person. you learn what triggers them. They learn what triggers you, and you both try to not step on each other's toes. But I mean, love? No, love has nothing to do with it. It's just, you learn to live with that person. They learn.
Right, love is off the table. I got it. But so if love is not a strong enough foundation, and if I'm going to assert, right, and anyone can question my research, but love is a feeling, right? If you don't feel good today, and your relationship is built strictly on love, there's a good chance that it could fall apart. If you have other things that you're compatible in, and that serves as the foundation, like, that's pretty solid. It doesn't depend on your feelings. And I'll give one example, is integrity. Like, if you both have integrity, or if one of you has integrity and the other doesn't, you don't have a solid foundation. But if integrity is one of the things you're compatible with, that could serve as a foundation, and love could be built on that. And I got it, Chris, you're saying there's no such thing. But I'm asking, do you have any idea what would make people compatible beyond just avoiding the triggers of when you're cohabitating?
Hobbies. Some people, you know, I was in the Navy with a girl, her and her husband. It was the weirdest shit I've ever seen. Her husband babysat, you know, and they would be around each other. They would be in the same room with each other for hours and hours at a time and not say a single word with each other. And I'm not even sure that they really had sex, but they loved each other. And they stayed together because they shared a love for video games, and they would play Dungeons and Dragons. They would play all these other video games. I mean, they had hobbies that they shared together. And they really like going to do these hobbies together on the weekend. They like doing them. They enjoyed each other's company while they were playing a video game. And that's one thing they did. I mean, so, it could be something as simple as hobbies, you know. But I'll tell you this, if even that relationship with their hobbies, it wasn't one-sided. So if you have a man and a woman where, you know, women like going to these stupid concerts, going to plays, and, you know, men are just fine sitting at home. Well, you know, a man's hobby is, you know, we'll go to a game, or, you know, we like, you know, camping or fishing or something like that. If she doesn't take an interest in his hobby, then it's not going to work.
Okay, so you're saying one compatibility is hobby. So anyone else, any other thoughts about compatibility?
Yeah, this is Janelle from San Francisco. I'd just like to just add to my idea that, you know, energy transfers is what's really behind compatibility, whether it's a conversation that, you know, transfers positive energy, holding hands, exchanging hobbies, or engaging in the same things. Just one interaction at a time compounds negative or positive, or neutralizes negative or positive. So I just think it's transfer of energy between two people that helps them, you know, stick or fall apart.
Okay, so we have hobbies, we have transference of energy. Dwayne, Joanne, Judith, what are your thoughts about compatibility, like important compatibility that keeps people together regardless of external circumstances?
Oh, I think agree with Chris.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead. I'll wait. Go ahead.
I think shared goals has a lot to do with it, and shared ambitions, wanting to see the other person successful in the dreams and ambitions that they have. You know, I'm supporting my husband through his video game career, and we've hit a rough patch with a new project that he's going through right now. And he has graciously allowed me to start a business, which is something I've been wanting to do since before we met. And we support each other in those goals. I get him through his day, and he gets me through the frustrations of making mistakes and trying to figure out what I'm doing, starting up my jewelry business. So I think shared goals and ambitions and wanting to see each other successful is a thing too.
All right, really good. Dwayne, you were going to say.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I was going to say the same thing, you know, sharing, you know, the goals. And, you know, I'm a business owner, and I know I hit a rough patch, and, you know, my wife was there. You know, she stepped up, you know. She's a nurse. She ended up working overtime. So, you know, just to get us through. And, you know, so, you know, and we're actually the opposite. And what they say, opposite attract. You know, I do. I like sports. She doesn't like sports, but she'll sit down. She may watch it. You know, she likes those old shows. Like, yeah.
No, I heard some static. I don't know if that was
okay,
Chris. I don't know if that was your mic rubbing up against clothes or something like that. But getting that sound again. Someone has some background noise. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
So she likes watching old shows, and, you know, versus I like watching sports, you know. So, I mean, you know, we compromise and say, okay, well, you know what, you know, I'll sit and watch some of the old shows. I don't like them. I don't agree with them, but, you know, I do it. You know, sometimes just like she watches sports. We went to sports events. We went to shows. So, you know, and, you know, we have a good time. We enjoy each other, you know, and we miss each other. Even though we're going to see each other every day, we, you know, when we go out, there's a reason, you know, when I'm done working, I want to come home to her, just like vice versa.
All right, really good. And Chris is talking about sharing common, having common interests. And even if you don't like it, you still share those experiences with the person.
Right.
So.
And that's love.
Very cool.
Because I'm not gonna do it with anybody, you know. I'm not gonna do it just anybody. I'm, you know, if I don't like you, you know, and I'm in a relationship now, I don't care. And just so you know, Chris, the girl wanted to come back, but I wouldn't take her back. So.
Yeah, she wanted to come back because she struck out in life.
That's okay.
You were her
regardless.
You were her break glass in case of emergency.
Chris,
there was a big. You were in a case. Break glass in case of emergency.
Regardless, she still wanted to come back, so I moved on, and I'm pretty sure after she wanted to come back, she moved on afterwards. So, you know, that's part of life.
Yeah. Yeah, but you, I mean, you didn't. But you have to understand, you didn't win anything by her wanting to come back. Like after she had been ran from by everybody else, you weren't getting some prize.
I already had a prize.
I apologize. I need to sign off. It's bedtime here. Thank you for the conversation. I appreciate
it. Thanks a lot, Joy. Take care.
You're very welcome. Good night.
We're gonna come to a close. With Judith, do you have any thoughts about compatibility? She may have us on mute. Doesn't know it. Okay. So any last thoughts?
Yes.
From
hi, Ted.
Oh,
hi, Ted. Yes.
Yes.
So compatibility. I think like Chris says that you about compatibility, that I really agree with him, and compatibility is extremely important. And so even though you might be attracted to someone, if you're not compatible, then you're just not. And you really have to make another choice or work out some other way of being with that person, and that's okay. It's but really compatibility is important, and sometimes you don't know the compatibility. It's kind of like you're just exploring what you have in common. Maybe you have things in common and maybe you don't. And then sometimes you might be some people might be attracted to someone that's the opposite of them, and you might find ways of working the relationship out. But yes, I agree. Compatibility, if there's no compatibility there, and compatibility can change. You both can be compatible in different ways as you mature in the relationship. So, yes, I agree. Compatibility is very important.
Good. Thank you. Any last words or thoughts or anything that you all have gotten out of this conversation today? Last thought.
Last words, even if you're compatible with her, still don't do it. There's nothing in it for you. Don't marry. Don't cohabitate. Don't even date.
All right. Got it. Thank you. Anyone else?
Well, I say, you know what, just take one day at a time. You know, if you're in a relationship, you know, it's better to love than not love at all. Even if it's 10 years, 15 years, or even if it's a year.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. Janelle or Judith, last word.
Yeah, this is Janelle. I'd say that compatibility is not something you can fabricate. Either you're compatible or you're not. And so if you're not compatible, no matter how hard you try, how many years you spend, it's going to be a struggle. So I think compatibility on day one or early in the relationship should be something that's gleaned, you know, as soon as possible.
Okay. Judith?
Yes, well, I think compatibility is usually there in the beginning of any relationship, or else you would not be talking with each other. So it's always there, and that relationships usually grow. You know, you both kind of figure things out as you go along. So yes, compatibility is important.
Okay, good. So I thank everyone, thank the callers, the listeners. I have a thought.
My thought is this.
When people meet and you say this person is the one and they don't see you that way, perhaps one of the biggest challenges is that we are so indoctrinated with finding the one that what we're not indoctrinated with is how do you prepare yourself for the one? You know, that's like saying I want to make it to a professional sport team, except I don't practice the sport. I don't play it. I don't, you know, I learn about it, but I'm not really engaged to be a professional player. And I think often people are not as prepared for relationships as they think they are, because then it would be a lot easier for people to figure out compatibility, because they'd be basing it on what they're actually offering and what would be compatible with what they offer, as opposed to having a pipe dream based solely on feeling. So I think there's a big challenge in how people prepare for relationships and why that's part of the reason there's so much divorce. So maybe that divorce is a conversation for another time. So Chris, Dwayne, Judith, Janelle, Joanne, if you still hear us, thank you for calling in. Thank you for all the listeners. It's a pleasure. This was a great conversation. And I look forward to everyone in another provocative topic next week. So have a great evening and a great week. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Dave.